As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Matt Goldman.
I'm Michael Sacca.
And I'm Joelle Steiniger. Today we talked with Jock Pertl, the owner of Digital Exits. What do you guys think?
It was really interesting to hear a different perspective. A lot of times you hear about these pop tech deals that are going down, and it was interesting to hear about what selling a smaller company, what you have to do to prepare for that.
Yeah, there was a lot of ways that you can get tripped up, and he kind of outlined a couple that have killed deals for him in the past. So if you're approaching an exit, this is a great way to get the opposite perspective. Let's get into it.
We'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors. Hover makes purchasing and managing your domain simple and easy. This week, I talked to George Diab of Working On about why he uses Hover.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've been using it for a long time, probably 2012, I think. I love it. The prices are great. The interface is awesome. And I still have a few domains out in some other places, and I'm just waiting to find some time, and I'll move them all to Hover. I love it. Yeah.
Go to hover.com and use the code SatisfiedCustomers to get 10% off your domain purchase today.
CodeShip is a hosted continuous delivery service focusing on speed, security, and customizability. You can set up continuous integration in a matter of seconds and automatically deploy when your tests have passed. CodeShip supports both your GitHub and Bitbucket projects, and you can get started with CodeShip's free plan today. Should you decide to go with a premium plan, you can save 20% off of any plan for the next 3 months by using code ROCKETSHIP. Go to CodeShip.com/ROCKETSHIP and check it out. So, Jock, tell us about Digital Exits.
Sure. Digital Exits is a brokerage firm that helps established online entrepreneurs find a buyer when they want to exit their company. Sort of quick background, I come from a traditional valuation background. So I worked in the family business and have been doing, you know, valuations since I was a teenager, as in, like, you know, valuations of, like, restaurants and, you know, mechanic shops and all that good stuff. And then I bought my first AdSense website in 2009. And that was my sort of first foray into, you know, trading, you know, web businesses. So that's Digital Exits in a nutshell.
So what do you find are the differences between traditional valuation and the valuation that occurs in tech, or at least pop tech?
In essence, valuation is based on the ability to produce future free cash flow. And if you take that from accounting speak and put into simple terms, you know, making profit in the future. And so the value of a company is going to be determined around basically a guess on how much money it can produce in the future. And then the more money that it can produce, the higher the valuation, and vice versa. The difference between sort of web business valuations and brick and mortar business valuations is maybe a little bit more to do on the asset side. So you're probably going to have a little bit more plant and equipment. You know, you might throw in a building or two into a traditional valuation. But at its core, you know, you're valuing the ability of the business to produce cash flow, and that's how you value a company.
So the companies that are coming to you to broker a deal, are there similarities that you see across those? Are they at a certain stage or a certain revenue level?
We're generally dealing in sort of 100 grand to 5 million in valuation in the brokerage. So we would call that sort of the small to medium business market.
And is that, you know, if that's the valuation, what does that break down to in terms of annual revenue?
So these businesses are trading sort of between 2 and 4 times cash flow. So what that means is if the business is producing 100 grand in profit a year, then the valuation is going to be between 2 times and 4 times that, so $200,000 to $400,000. Now, the smaller the business, generally the lower the multiple, so you're going to look at generally around the 2 times. Whereas if you've got, you know, a business that's producing, you know, 2 million in cash flow a year, then it might be somewhere around the 4 times earnings. Just purely from a risk standpoint, you know, return on investment, you know, 2 times earnings is a 50% return on investment. 4 times earnings is a 25% return on investment. So it's just a sort of a risk reward equation.
And what are some other things that entrepreneurs can do to increase that multiple?
Well, first of all, have a good business that makes money. We get a lot of valuations where people, you know, send us a website. They're like, oh, it's got so much potential and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, how much money does it make? And the answer is zero. So it's probably step one. But if you've got a decent business and you want to improve the value, again, it comes down to that ability to produce profit. So focusing on, you know, customer lifetime value, conversion rates, you know, really real basic business stuff in terms of growing your sales and reducing your revenue. And then from like a value standpoint in the marketplace, if you're the leader in the market, and you've got very low churn with your customers, you're going to receive a lot higher valuation. If there's a level of defensibility about the business, which means that someone can't easily copy you tomorrow, that's going to increase the valuation. If you have, you know, some type of specific product or process or patent around something that's, you know, also defensible, that's another way that you're going to increase the valuation. Selling when you're growing. So a business always has a traditional growth curve where it's startup phase, growth phase, plateau, and then decline. So it's, you know, like a like a camel's hump. And so selling technically at that point of just before plateau is the best time to sell the business. There's called the BCG framework, Boston Consulting Group framework, or BCG matrix. And the matrix has four different categorizations on businesses. And then they're split into what's the relative market growth rate and what's the relative market share of that business. So it's four quadrants. So in the top left-hand corner is a star business, which is a high market growth rate and a high relative market share. So that's ability to produce cash. So that's a star. Then to the right, in the top right-hand corner, you've got a question mark, which is a high market growth rate. However, it's got a low relative market share. And the reason that it's a question mark is it's a question mark as to whether it can attain or achieve the highest market share. Then if you go to the bottom left-hand corner, you've got a cash cow, which is low market growth rate, however, a high market share. And then the final quadrant, which is the bottom right-hand corner, is a dog, which is low market growth rate and low market share. So that's the sort of decision matrix from a more institutionalized investor's standpoint on a business in terms of classification. So you can see there that they measure two things, the market growth rate, and there's a really good analogy that when the tide rises, all boats rise. And what that means is if you're in a market that's growing really, really fast, it doesn't matter if you're a good operator or a good business. Just because the market is growing so much, then you're going to do well. And I'll take CrossFit, for example, is a market that has a high growth rate. So you could have a business selling, you know, products into the CrossFit market and not necessarily be the market leader, but be still making a lot of money. And then the other one was the relative market share. And so that's in the ability to produce cash. So if you have the, you know, the market share, you know, let's take, what's a perfect example? Let's take Uber, for example. You know, Uber is in a high growth rate market and has the highest market share. And if you look at Lyft in comparison, their ability to grow sales is just dwarfed by Uber's market share. And so, Uber is therefore a star business because of both those things. Now, because the market is growing so fast, Lyft still makes money. However, Uber's ability to generate cash versus Lyft's is like 10 to 1, purely for the fact that they just control so much market share.
This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com.
So when you're dealing with a smaller company, how do you gauge the market share?
That's a really hard question. Let's just take a standard e-commerce business. you can gauge it by doing a little bit of investigation. Let's say you had an e-commerce business that sold hookers. And so you would probably, if I was going to like research that market and figure out who the market leader was, I'd probably do a couple of things. I'd look first, all right, who's the leader on Google, as in the search rankings? Who's advertising on AdWords? Who's the leader in Amazon? And then I would probably try and figure out who the suppliers are to that company and probably call them up and ask them, you know, who's buying the most volume of product off you? Or you could just ring them all up and figure out how many units a month they're selling. Like there's, you know, a little bit of investigation is going to figure out who the market share is. And, you know, we were talking on before the call about, you know, my interest in Berkshire Hathaway and value investing, and Warren Buffett as an investor just calls up the CEO and he's like, hey, mate, I'm interested in investing in your company. Tell me about it. Or if you're looking to buy something, you could be really cheeky and just pose as a customer and be like, you know, I'm thinking of buying your product. Tell me a little bit about it. You know, how many orders are you doing a month? Like you sort of, you know, ask around the question of figuring out how much sales they're making. If the public, you know, if they're not going to be open to share the public data.
Yeah. So for companies that are, you know, potentially going to be at this size and they decide to sell for whatever reason at that stage, what could they do in the earlier stages to make sure that they're prepared for a sale? Is there any kind of, you know, before the due diligence period, is there anything that they have to do informing the company to make sure that it'll smooth the process later on?
So actually going through the process on this now where a deal's sort of in the balance because of a company not setting things up separately. The biggest deal killer in due diligence is approving financials. So that's basically going line item by line item to the bank statement and, you know, cross-correlating that between income and expenses. And if you have two companies, separate the bank accounts, separate the expenses, don't lump everything in all together because you're just going to kill the deal at the point of due diligence, which is the point where you really don't want to kill the deal. So that's probably one thing is, you know, being able to prove track record on, you know, income and expenses. What else do people need to pre-set up? Yeah, basically, the ability to prove the claims. So when you claim that your business is making $2 million a year in sales, you need to be able to prove that through showing the merchant account or the credit card processing statements or, you know, whatever it is, because that's the biggest thing that's going to kill the deal.
And how are the broker fees set up? If, you know, it sounds like a broker is a necessary piece of this process and there's a lot of due diligence that goes into it. What are the fees that are involved in that?
Standard market rate's 10%. We charge 10%. Most of our competitors charge 10%. A couple of them charge a little bit more on certain deals, but that's the expectation that you should be working with.
And what else goes into that due diligence process besides, you know, comparing financials, which it sounds like is a pretty crazy process of going line by line way back into the history of the company. What else is involved?
Sure. So there's probably going to be a couple of things. You're going to probably do a legal audit on the company, background check, that kind of thing. You're going to look at traffic stats for, you know, hopefully you've got Google Analytics installed. You're going to have a look at the supplier relationships, contracts, all that good stuff. You're probably going to do an inventory count if you've got a product-based business. You're going to interview key staff, especially if they're key drivers in the business. That's probably going to be sort of the main channels that you're going to look at during due diligence. But at the end of the day, most of due diligence is going to be a financial audit or reconciliation. And then the other part of the due diligence process is going to be, you know, how does the business run operationally and trying to figure that out.
And besides issues with, you know, the company not being broken out separately, what's the other biggest cause of deals falling through that you see?
When an entrepreneur takes their foot off the pedal, during the selling process and sales drop. That happened to us the other day. What else?
When you say that, I'm curious. What did that indicate? I mean, the sales dropped when they took their foot off, but was it advertising? Was it like the outbound sales that they were doing that they just stopped doing all of a sudden?
I think they just stopped marketing to the list, you know, trying to acquire new customers, that kind of thing.
Okay.
The business dropped like 42% year on year in the 4 months that we had it on the market. And so that's, that doesn't bode well when a buyer's doing his forecasted calculations and they're basing it on last year's revenue. And then, you know, this year they post 40% lower numbers and then, you know, just stuff doesn't feel good and, you know, buyers pull out and rightly so.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Sorry, go on.
So what else besides taking their foot off the gas pedal?
I don't know. If they're a crook, well, you know, if there's some legal back history, like, you know, we try and vet people, or let me rephrase that. We do vet people before we deal with them, but, you know, stuff that is a bit of a curveball can kill the deal. What else? I don't know, sometimes on the buyer side, you know, like their financing falls through or, you know, they change their mind, they find another deal while they're going through due diligence. Those are probably the main reasons.
Awesome. Well, this is super interesting to learn about, you know, a different side of selling than you normally hear about. And I think, you know, no matter what stage you're at, there's probably always an option for where to take the company. So can you tell people where they can keep up with you online?
Sure. If they go to digitalexits.com, they can find me and a whole bunch of guides and reports that I created in a podcast, etc. And they can go and check that out.
Cool. Thanks so much for coming on.
No worries, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And be sure to check out our app discount section, where we have discounts on products that we use every day, like Woo Themes, Wistia, Treehouse. Go to rocketship.fm/essentials and get your discounts today.